Oh, yeah. What's going on, DMV? You know who it is. Youngest in Charge Movement. Linnell Willingham here with you live and local on 106.7 The Fan. And always streaming live on the always free Odyssey app. Ride with me as I take you up to 10 o'clock here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. Let's get the pleasantries out the way. What's up, DMV? Excited to be back in the saddle with you. We got a hell of a lot to get into. I was out there yesterday. I got my whistle wet, so to speak. I got my shot of Washington Commander fever. I was out there, boots on the ground in Ashburn. I will empty out my OTA notebook. How the hell does he have an OTA notebook? Because I'm just that guy, pal. Speaking of being that guy, pal. We were talking about it in the bullpen right before we got going. We have the Bronx Bombers, right? Like, that's the nickname for the old Yankees. What about the half-street homer boys talking about James Wood in the old Washington Nationals, baby? There we go. I got Spencer Nussbaum going to join us coming up in about 20 minutes, top of the 7 o'clock hour. We're going to ask him a bunch about the half-street homer boys, James Wood, and those Washington Nationals. Why was I talking about him? Well, there's plenty of reason to talk about one James Wood. But we'll save the X's and O's talk, so to speak, for 7 o'clock with our guy Spencer Nussbaum. But in terms of James Wood, you know, it's very difficult, right, to fall in love with an athlete when they don't give you a whole lot at the podium, right? It's very difficult to fall in love with an athlete when they aren't, to be fair, right, the most personable guy. It's not easy. It makes the transition, it makes the relationship a lot more difficult to cultivate, is how I would put it, right? Not with James Wood. I'll be honest. I don't think if I heard James Wood's voice right now on a post-game presser, I wouldn't be able to tell you who the hell he was. But I do know this. Every time this brother is up to bat, see ya. Every time this brother is up to bat, it is must-see TV. And it's fascinating. We'll talk more with Spencer about this. Look, in the grand scheme of things, right, You're a game above 500 right now, I believe, in terms of the wild card race in the National League. Like, it's May. Are we really paying attention that closely to it? But the brand of baseball that they're playing right now, in the offensive eruption, Snoop D-O-double-G had a song in the mid-2000s called Sensual Seduction. The Nationals are having an offensive eruption. It has been out of this world, man, for them to be getting the national love that they're getting. That's how I knew, because you know I'm a little bit plugged out. I'm doing the gig late night. You all catch me here on 106.7 The Fan, Monday through Wednesday, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. Eastern time for Westwood One Sports Tonight. You all always tap in, and I appreciate everybody here from the DMV that continues to support it. But my co-host wanted to talk about James Wood. That's how I knew that his aura, and we're going to get to aura in a second here, his aura, despite him not saying much at the podium, despite him, that Papa John's commercial that we got last year was probably like the most we've ever gotten to dive into his personality. I saw him at a Wizards game. Literally just looked like some random tall dude. Wrangler jeans, no-name New Balances, regular ball cap.
I will say this, Linnell, because we had last year the company Christmas thing that we are. The event we do with the Wizards where we get a box and do all that. Mm-hmm. So I was walking around the concourse at the time and the Nats were there and I saw this big tall dude.
You can't miss him.
And with a handler, and I was like, I immediately knew, like, that's James Wood. But if you didn't know, you just think it's just some big, gigantic guy.
Just this dude. Just as you always say, I do random bits. I talk to everybody. I'm a very personable guy. Whenever I see tall people, even in the grocery store, I can't help it. I go, did you hoop back in the day? Like, what did you do?
There's a guy I used to work at a Giant in Springfield, and there's a guy who would always come in. He's super tall, and he always had like a gold bracelet on and a chain, and I meant to ask him for years.
What did you do, brother?
It's like, I know you hooped.
You did
I just
something.
Need to know where.
You know what I'm saying? I feel that. That's kind of how James Wood is. But, like, I say all that to say he's tremendous, and we'll rake through the numbers here as we roll throughout the show. I mean, he is – it honestly makes me look big picture at the trade. And I'll never forget, I was sitting right here in this very seat on the day that Juan Soto was dealt. I was on that summer day here on 106.7 The Fan, and the amount of calls that we took, and people were furious about the Juan Soto trade. The old saying is hindsight's 20/20. Nationals are big fat winners in that Juan Soto deal. Are you kidding me? Between Abrams, Wood, I know you moved off of Big Mac, but damn it, we can talk about Aura, and that's where I want to go here with this. I was out yesterday with the Aura King, Jayden Daniels, just looking like Miss Regina all in the face. It was amazing to see. Just a good dude. He had his personal quarterback's coach there yesterday, so they're embracing it. It was great to watch. We'll talk about them in detail, but just watching them just move around, like the dude's just different. And Commander's PR on social is leading into the fact that we're just thirsty for Jayden Daniel clips. The caption for him putting his helmet on yesterday was, "Here, damn. Here, damn, take it. Take it. I know you want to watch it. Take it. There's a man here in town, and he happens to wear a curly W, that has more aura than one Jayden Daniels. I think James Wood, in his effortless aura, actually supersedes the quarterback, and I know he took us to the conference championship game in year one. There are things, you want to talk about making a hell of a first impression on a town. Jayden Daniels, we nicknamed him Jesus. You know what I'm saying? But that James Wood, was it yesterday where he just effortlessly robs the home run and like nothing happened? Just makes the throw back to second like it was nothing.
I mean, everything he does looks effortless. I mean,
and remember, there were talks about, well, can he play in right field? Can he play defense? Remember those questions we were having last year? He has been on one to start this year. But when I talk about his aura being effortless, he's not, and I'm not saying Jayden Daniels is trying. So don't misconstrue that. JD5 doesn't got to try to do anything. But with James Wood, bro, he's just, for lack of a better phrase, he's just him. He knows how damn good he is. We're going to get into the
baseball
numbers. He's literally, like, he's everything, dog. He's the American dream, James Wood. I love everything about the guy, man, and I think he's the aura king right now in DC sports because it's so effortless, dog.
James Wood is everything Yankees fans want Aaron Judge to be.
Literally, and he doesn't say anything, and he's clutch.
Yeah, and he doesn't play New York, New York outside the Red Sox locker room after they lose.
Like, come on, man. I love everything that this group has done. Speaking of aura, I was one of the first on the scene last year with Daylen Lyles' aura, that speedy Gonzalez mother lover. Love everything that we've seen from the young Nats this year. It has been, in the win-loss column, I think they've exceeded expectations is what I would say. But we all know the real issues that lie with this group. We're going to have some tough conversations with our pal Spencer Nussbaum coming up top of the 7 o'clock hour. Certain somebody's got 47 RBIs, batting damn near 300. Rock Boy's in the building tonight. Rock Nation client. Is there hope amongst Nats fans that they can get something done long-term with C.J. Abrams? That's the big question I have. I get very naughty with Nats talk. I immediately start thinking about the future. I immediately start thinking about hot-button issues like, well, if you're not going to be able to sign them, boy, the stock is super high right now, ain't it? We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more with our pal Spencer Nussbaum, top of the 7 o'clock hour. When we get back, my top evaluation, my top observation from Commanders OTAs next. You are not in the space-time continuum. You didn't go back in time. It is the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham rocking out with you as we get you up to 10 o'clock here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. We have major hoops on the horizon tonight. San Antonio Spurs trying to get it back in blood. We will give you a full-scale preview of Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Excuse me, not the NBA Finals. The NBA Western Conference.
But it feels like it.
It feels like it,
I keep
right?
calling it the NBA Finals on accident.
Dog, I think it was some obscure member of the Thunder scored in one of the blowout games. I think it was Game 2. And I was like, damn, he just scored in the Finals. Like, but it's not the Finals. That's the problem. We'll get you a full-scale preview of Game 6 coming up a little bit later on. Spencer Nussbaum going to join the program in about 7 minutes or so as we tell you what it is and what it ain't when it comes to the Half Street Homer Homies, as I'm now calling them, a.k.a. the Washington Nationals. But I was boots on the ground yesterday in Ashburn, out at day one of Commanders OTAs. I had to get my whistle wet. I had to get my fix in of the old burgundy and gold. And I say this all the time about OTAs. In a nutshell, like, there's really not much you can actually take away, but I have an ability. I have an ability to make everything interesting. And I'm going to do that because there were some observations yesterday. Now, the tempo of the practice right off the rip, I think, is something that was noticeable because I was pretty critical of what practice looked like during training camp last year. And there was not this sense of urgency that I expected them to have coming off of a year in which they punched their ticket to the conference championship game. And obviously Terry McLaurin not being there was a big dark cloud that hung over this group. Yesterday, my most impressive, my biggest takeaway is the attendance. Everybody was there. The big fella, Laramie Tunsil, who you all swear hates me. You know what he said? He's walking off the field with his pal, Charles Amenihue, and he says, "You don't talk to that MF-er right there." And I, for a second, went, "Oh." And then dapped me up, cheesed, showed me, flashed the grills at me, just doing big Laramie aura stuff. He is
big L to big L.
Big L to big L, Max. But no, him being there is huge. The fact that everyone's bought in, man. Sam Cosmi spoke about it post-practice. There's just different level of urgency, and it feels like a different level of buy-in as well when it comes to this group this time around here. They get it.
Yeah, man. I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing what they've got going. I mean, what was your big kind of takeaway from practice yesterday?
Yeah, they're going to be under center a lot. That was one thing that was very evident right away. But there's a comfortability that Jaden has with it. And even, we didn't see it, I feel like in 24 we saw him go under center an interesting amount of times. And whatever he did, it felt random.
Yeah, like, it was always like, I'm pointing at the screen, like, this is weird.
He's under center. But every time he did it then, he was comfortable with it. I think it was a fourth down against Pittsburgh in 24 where they were under center and they converted it. And it's like, oh, you went to under center looking a massive moment. So I believe Jaden Daniels when he talked about how comfortable he is. My biggest takeaway, though, is one thing you kept hearing, and this is from talking to, you know, other beat reporters and people that are there, and then you talk to, you know, some of the players as they're walking off. And not every conversation, I would say, with players is documented and put on camera and put on video because there's an art to information gathering and the pressure of a camera being in somebody's face, you know, a lot.
Just got to keep your ears open.
Just keep your ears open. And one thing that it feels like you kept hearing is like, man, Jaden Daniels is pretty darn comfortable with what they're doing. And then to take it a step further, and he kind of spoke to this post-practice, it's been a collaborative effort between him and new offensive coordinator David Blau to kind of piecemeal this thing together. I think they're in that process right now, and you hear this phrase all the time. He's drinking through a fire hose, so to speak. They're going to throw everything at him right now and weed out what he's comfortable with, what concepts he likes and doesn't like. I think this offense is going to surprise people in 2026. I know everyone's excited about the retooled defense and that group. They have to be better than what they were last year because they were literally one of the worst defenses.
I think anything would be better.
The bar is limbo low, is how I would put it, right? I think the offense is going to be the better unit next year.
Ooh.
I think that offense is going to lead the way. I differ in my opinions from a lot of you. A lot of people are clamoring and screaming for Stephon Diggs and Brandon Ayuk, and we'll let you hear JD5 answer a question about one Brandon Ayuk a little bit later on. But I think what they have in-house, part of it's ego. But part of it is you gotta know and give your guys an opportunity. You think that Adam Peters just wants to give up on Luke McCaffrey and Jalen Lane? Hell no. He's a talent evaluator. There's a pride that comes with this in terms of the selection process. You want your dudes to work. So before they give Ayuk or Diggs or any other name a chance, I think the in-house candidates are going to get every opportunity to prove themselves. And another in-house candidate in my kind of Nels OTA one hero, and the guy that, when I say hero, he didn't really do anything spectacular, but I think he is going to be a lot more involved than people maybe realize if he's able to stay healthy. They like Treylon Burks a hell of a lot. And I think he is the odds-on favorite right now to be the number two opposite Terry McLaurin with Antonio Williams playing in the slot with Jalen Lane and Luke McCaffrey rotating in the slot. One of the fastest dudes out there on the field yesterday, and this is going to sound crazy, was actually Van Jefferson. So he is another guy. That's interesting. Diami looked good. It was It was good, man. I got my whistle wet. We'll talk all things Commanders coming up as we roll throughout the 7 o'clock hour. Next, though, I'm going to just continue to say this because I love the alliteration. The Half Street Homer Homies, the old Washington Nationals, their offense in fuego. Spencer Nussbaum covers them on a daily basis for The Athletic. He joins us next. Yes, indeedy. The party continues right here on 106.7. The Fan, Youngest in Charles, and O. Willingham rocking out with you as we take you up to 10 o'clock here on a Thursday night edition of Overtime. Right now, we go out to the guest hotline. For the first time this show, we find one of the absolute best covering the Washington Nationals, our pal Spencer Nussbaum. He does so for The Athletic. Give him a follow on the X app at Spencer Nussbaum _. Spence, what's going on, pal? We appreciate you making some time for us, man.
How are we doing today?
I am good, bro. I will peel the curtain back all the way because we did buzz you a little bit late. When you have to officially bounce, you let me know via text message. I don't want to keep you too long. I appreciate you making some time for us, though, man. Let's skip the pleasantries and get right into it, man. No curly W's, as I like to call them. Spencer, I gave him a nickname right as the show started. We have the Bronx Bombers in New York, right? That's obviously a well-known nickname. What about the Half Street Homer Hitting Homies? What about that, Spencer Nussbaum?
That's not bad. It's funny. I saw some people on Twitter trying to give him a different nickname. So I wrote this story about a couple weeks ago, right when they hit 500 mm-hmm. for the first time. Jacob Young said, you know, why not us? And so people have been calling him the why not Nats. I think that's a nice debate between yours and that one. So, see a little rivalry going and see what happens.
I'm about to say, man, they have been talky hot at the plate, and obviously James Wood and CJ Abrams at the forefront of that. If we had to give away like the most improved player award for 2026, it feels like CJ is the front runner when you talk about his numbers and what he's on pace to finish with 33 homers, 135 RBIs. Like, the numbers are crazy to this point. Have you seen any change with him dating back to the spring? And, you know, what is your reaction to what he's done here in the first month plus of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's been unbelievably impactful. And we've seen good stretches out of CJ in the past. I don't know that we've ever seen him look like a top 10 hitter in baseball for this extended of a stretch coming up on, I guess, over 2 months now, and that's what he's been. The big thing with CJ is, in years past, when he'd go through some of these cold stretches, you'd see him chase a lot, you'd see him get outside the heart of the zone, and you'd see those stretches last on for 2-3 weeks. What he's done this year, in terms of pulling the ball in the air, hitting the ball hard, and most importantly, if he's getting in those stretches where he chases outside of the zone, it's like a 2-3 day thing, as opposed to a 2-3 week thing. So all that off-season training, getting stronger, and then honing in on the approach. He's impossible to pitch to right now. And you know, the Nats have absolutely needed it. He's definitely been among the most improved players, on the roster and frankly in the National League.
When you look at the overall team success and where they're at right now, and obviously it's super duper early, Spencer, to be looking at the wild card race in either conference, but as we continue to get more of a sample size with this group, will the narrative change or will the thought process change for this front office in terms of what they do potentially at the deadline?
Yeah, I've been kind of asking around about this and more so racking my brain on this. At the moment, I still think they're taking the long-term view on this. And I know that's hard for fans to hear, but the way that kind of I've thought through it is, hey, you want to be competitive for 10 years as opposed to two.
Right.
Even if that means maybe.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, now could they make some maybe marginal adds at the deadline where in the past, you know, you would have just seen them, you know, sell off pieces? Sure. I think that's absolutely in play. But if they get a great offer for a CJ Abrams where they say, hey, this sets us up with, you know, some, you know, three or four all-star caliber players the way you had in the Soto deal, things of that nature, I think they'd still be open to that. So I think maybe the way it positions them more so is, hey, is the window for 2027 open in the way that it wasn't before? But I think 2026, you're still maybe taking the long view at the moment.
For sure. And it's been fascinating to watch. I think just the brand of baseball that they're currently playing, you know, makes them a lot more entertaining. You remember stretches over the past couple of years, Spencer, where they're not hitting the ball worth a darn, man, to put it, you know, lightly, man. So this has been refreshing, even though, you're winning a little bit more, but you're still really not a legitimate contender within, you know, the lens of the National League wildcard race. The biggest weakness here, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it seemingly is the starting pitching. I know a lot of people were excited about, you know, Cade Cavalli being healthy and being ready to go this year. What have you made of him here through the first couple of months?
Yeah, I mean, he has been, I don't want to say as advertised, but pretty close to it, frankly, right. At this point. Yeah, like, he had a early stretch this season where it felt like some of the starts were short. He had one blow-up outing. I forget exactly when it was. Outside of that, he hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs in a start since. The strikeouts are up recently. He has basically given the Nationals everything they could have asked for over this stretch. I think the only person over his last 7 starts with more strikeouts is Jacob Mizrowski, who, you know, sits 101.
Yeah.
So,
the Mizrowski.
Yes, exactly. So, he's been super impressive. This is kind of, if you want, like a big picture trend, like he has been staying in the zone in a way that all the National starters have, and he has the stuff where he can throw it down the middle and guys will still whiff, and right. if he sequences it right. He's kind of this figurehead for both a big picture philosophy for the whole organization, major and minor leagues, in terms of building up stuff. And then for the major leagues in particular, throwing those strikes as much as possible early in counts and getting ahead. He's been great as of late. And yeah, the starting pitching has been the Achilles heel, but even that's kind of trending up recently. So very impressive stuff.
Everything turning up Nats right now. You were referring to that that early April start against Pittsburgh where he lasted only, you know, an inning and a third, I believe, giving up 4 runs. But most of the season he has been, as you said, as advertised. Looking big picture at this group, how pleased do you think they are organizationally for where they're at, and like how much of this do you think is a surprise to them?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Candidly, I think if you would have told them that we're sitting here on May 28th and they're above 500, I think that would have surprised them.
Yeah.
But with how confident they are in their apparatus and their approach, and I'm speaking about kind of the coaching staff in front office specifically.
Right.
The strides that they've made on the hitting side in particular, on the player development side in particular, I don't think those are massive surprises in the sense that they knew we have talent in the building. And more than that, we have the coaches and the processes set up to help them out. I think the players this whole time have said that they aren't surprised. They realized pretty early into spring training that they could surprise some folks.
There's something here, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I think candidly, what I'm curious about and what I'll kind of poke around about over the next few weeks is how real the decision makers feel like this is, and how that does change their plans, not necessarily for the deadline,
right.
but
yeah.
For how they can get the best out of these guys. And it's been super impressive.
It makes it all fascinating. I thought I want to double click on what you said about the CJ Abrams thing. Like, how does where you're at organizationally, like as far as your timeline, does that influence what type of deal you need to move off of CJ Abrams, who you astutely pointed out, top 10 hitter in baseball right now, the way that he's playing? How much of that kind of factors into that decision in your mind?
Yeah, again, and that's where I kind of bring up the, you know, the timelines do matter, but I think candidly they're looking at big picture value, right. where it's, we trust our player development system. We trust our system to maybe not rush guys, but get guys pretty quickly up through the system.
Right.
And so if you have a package that, you know, is even better than the McKenzie Corbett package, which is been pretty good so far. I think it's a case where you ultimately look at value this season, especially if you can't like extend CJ or anything, which, you know, door's still open, but feels unlikely at the moment.
Yeah.
All those pieces come together, but I don't think you think too much about timelines in terms of like getting AAA guys, AA guys, things of that nature, at least at the moment.
Yeah, it is going to be fascinating to watch this group as we continue to get deeper into the summer months. Spencer, appreciate you as always, my friend. We got to do this more. We appreciate you on short notice too, man. I damn sure appreciate it.
Absolutely, always happy to help.
Yes, indeed. One of the absolute best. Talking all things Curly W's, our pal Spencer Nussbaum of The Athletic. Give him a follow on the X app at Spencer Nussbaum _. We had some pretty big Major League Baseball breaking news earlier today. So yesterday, the MLBPA gave their first proposal for a brand new collective bargaining agreement. Obviously, every baseball fan across the country is awaiting December to see what it is and what it ain't, whether or not there will be a lockout. Today, the Major League Baseball, they had a counter proposal in which they proposed, as expected, a hard salary cap as a part of the next CBA. The salary floor for teams beginning in 2027 would be set for $172 million, which includes player benefits with the ceiling at $245.3 million. So all that means, just to put it in layman's terms, right? The owners are about to go down that road. Every time we have this conversation, there is just, to me, no incentive for the Players Association to agree to something that hasn't been in place forever. And now, in a day and age in which there's more money being spent than ever, you want us to limit how much we can pocket? But Rob Manfred was on last night with Pat McAfee. And by the way, thank you to the Cavs for giving us a late-night Pat McAfee show last night, because they suck and got swept. Rob Manfred was on, and he had some pretty interesting comments that I want to play coming up on the other side of the break. First, let's get to Ronald in Fairfax. What's going on, Ronald?
What's going on, Linnell, man? I got a hard time believing in anything Nationals-related right now, man.
I dig it. You're a scoring lover, man.
DJ Abrams, you want me to go down to the park, spend $18 on a drink, go watch CJ Abrams get traded in a couple weeks. I mean, James Woods could be playing in L.A.
Yeah.
What's the point?
I get that it's a real concern for Nats fans, but I don't know how closely you follow it. One thing that I would say is like the saving grace for Nats fans.
I don't go in person is my thing.
I feel and that.
My biggest thing right now that we need to be focusing on is De'Ami Brown might be walking into a excellent season.
That's
he's just finding it with Jaden. Mm-hmm. He took a dumb contract, and now he's back, man.
Hey, I actually am pretty optimistic and bullish on the Commanders receiver group relative to everybody else in town. So I definitely am smelling what you're cooking, so to speak. Here's what I'll say to every scoring Nats fan out there, and I appreciate the call, Ronald. Here's what I would say to every scoring Nats fan out there. You have to – it's just similarly to what the Wizards had to endure here. I know the result is tough, and he brings up, we can be traded by tomorrow, next week. I get that, right? You have to credit their process and the steps and the patience that they've shown here in doing things different. Talking about this new front office here in Washington, man. Think about what this front office was kind of lauded for when they were first hired, right? Unique, outside-the-box thinking, doing everything they can to get better, leaving no stone unturned from a player development standpoint, from a talent acquisition standpoint, so on and so forth. And to start this season, you're seeing the fruits of the labor. They're walking it like they talk it, so to speak, right? The great American philosophers, the Migos, once said, walk it like you talk it. The Nats are walking it like they're talking it. You're seeing the youngsters get better throughout the course of this season. You're seeing guys take steps in the right direction. So you can be, you know, panicked all you want about potentially losing guys down the line, but this group in place right now has shown that there's a process that they're going to follow, and I expect every young pup that comes up through this pipeline to be a beneficiary of that process. So Nats fans, tread lightly is what I would say. I told you I wanted to let you hear from Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball. We'll let you do that next. I probably should stop stuffing my mouth with hot Cheetos when we're about to come back.
I mean, the bag's got to be almost gone by now.
What's up, peeps? This is the fan, Youngest and Charles. I know Willingham rocking out with you. Mad Max in the house with us as well. We'll get you up to 10 o'clock tonight. I got an update on the NBA Finals coming up here momentarily because Victor Wembanyama is about to go insane tonight.
Why the video has come across our desk.
The video that's come hot across the desk here into the fan will make a grown man cry. I know what his attire and getup means for tonight. I'll tell you my exact thoughts coming up here momentarily, but I want to let you hear from the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred. I was making a joke last night, or earlier in the show, rather, that last night, because the Cavs suck and got swept, they put the Pat McAfee show, excuse me, on in prime time. They had a bunch of different commissioners on. Big Roger didn't show up because he's too big for that. But we did have the alien Adam Silver. We had cheap-ass Rob Manfred. Everybody was a part of the party, man. It was absolutely great. Dana White was there. Dana White just randomly shows up to things. First and foremost, I don't even want to get political at all. How the hell are we doing a UFC fight on the White House lawn? What the hell is going on? How? It's crazy.
It'll be very secure, I'm sure.
Oh, well, huh? Will it? Will it, my friend? I mean, that's enough of that. Let me stop channeling my inner Eric Bickle. Shout out to EB. Let's continue to move on here. Rob Manfred, big fight going on right now between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. Major League Baseball has lost their damn mind from my perspective. They are trying to implement a salary cap floor for the first time in the history of the sport. And as I said before we took the last time out, there is no incentive for the players to do and agree to this unprecedented move. It's never happened. In the way that the contracts are booming right now, the way that the paper is being dispersed, if I'm a player, why in the holy blue hell would I limit the amount of coin that I could bring in? To me, the argument in the discussion points with the CBA is that simple. Why would one side limit their earning power? Rob Manfred says that, look, this is an issue that clearly has been brought to the forefront, but there won't be a work stoppage.
We appreciate what you're doing for the league. We appreciate what you're doing for sports. And good luck. No work stoppage. Hey.
Listen, you know what? There's no one who wants to avoid a work stoppage more than I do. Believe me.
That'd be on your ass. Hey, they put that on your ass. Yeah. They would say, yeah. Now, granted, we all know that you all know that the game right now is doing something special for our society. So we appreciate the hell out of you, Mr. Commissioner. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Manfred.
Rob Manfred, love me some Snackavy. That's what the females should call him, Snackavy. Handsome guy.
All right.
I was too far. I know. Here's the thing, though. I think this year, and Max, help me out with this. Help me steer this conversation because I'm trying to compartmentalize it here in real time. The argument from Rob Manfred and company is that they're trying to get the teams that don't spend money to spend, pretty much, right?
Like, yeah.
That's what everybody wants in this situation.
Essentially, yeah.
A required spending amount.
But right? If everyone has to spend the same amount, then you're just going to start paying bad players a little bit more money.
And then it's like a bunch of fatty contracts for dudes. You're going to end up with a Jan Mahimi contract. You know what I'm saying?
Basically, yeah.
Or Andrew Nicholson contract for all my whiz kids out there. But, like, I think it's just fascinating from the perspective of, like, is this the hill that they're willing to die on? And I'm totally different. I think anybody that's a Major League Baseball fan, you all are sickos. To watch 162 games, to be tuned in and have the highs and the lows of a season that there are, I think it's a very niche sport when it comes to its fan base. The sport to me, and it's happened in the 90s, the sport can't overcome a work stoppage. The WNBA is coming, ladies and gentlemen. I know everyone's going to laugh at it, but I've been on, Max, you know this because you worked with me for a while. You know I've been beating this drum for years. I'm rooting for a lockout. I'm rooting for the work stoppage just so I can pat myself on the damn back and say I told you so. But I think with the growing popularity of other sports leagues, dude, like Major League Baseball, if you don't get your act together, especially with all the BS regional TV deals that exist and it's hard to consume the product in some markets, I think you run the risk of losing the interest of fans if you have a significant work stoppage. And if it does get to a work stoppage, the problem at hand to me is so financially driven that I don't see either side being willing to compromise or nudge.
Yeah, it's such a complicated issue because, I mean, just players they're going to dig their heels in and we're going to get that work stoppage. Like, we've felt this way for like the past 2 years, yeah. And then at the end of last season, we were all like, "All right, enjoy this. Yeah. This is this could so be final, it for a while.
The last dance, yeah."
So yeah, I'm not. It'll get worked out eventually, but it's going to be quite a fight over these next, I don't know, few months. But really, next year is when it's going to hit crunch time. So February and March, mm-hmm. and even probably April and beyond.
How does free agency get impacted by this? Like, I assume that gets severely.
Well,
it has already
been impacted with guys signing certain contracts or not, or like a lot of 1 year deals were mm-hmm. signed in free agency this year. So it's going to be bizarre. Players are getting ready for it. Guys are signing bigger contracts right now while they can. So it just all depends on, you know, what your thought process is behind it as a player going and how you want to go about it and how much money you want to kind of bank away just in case. But yeah, it's going to be something.
Anytime money is at the crux of an issue, expect people to get out of character, expect people to get messy. It could get messy with confetti tonight in San Antonio. If Oklahoma City does their job, they have the chance to close out the Spurs tonight on the road. Based off of what Victor Wembanyama wore to the arena tonight, no chance in hell that happens. I'll tell you what he's got on next. Still rocking and rolling here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. Youngest in charge, and L. Willingham kicking it with you until 10 o'clock. We'll have Bustin' Loose Baseball coming up following us. Here on The Fam, Grant Paulson, Toby Altizer, Darius Dameron. Super excited to check into that on the way home. Just to hear what the fellas are thinking about, man. You get a new episode of Bustin' Loose Baseball whenever a series wraps up for the old Washington Nationals. Wonder what the boys have to say about. And Max, if anyone tries to rip the nickname, you let me know. It's so unique that it probably is unrippable.
It's a mouthful, too.
It is a mouthful. It's a mouthful. I'm working on it. I think I'm just going to leave it as a mouthful. I'm going to load up the nickname the way they load up the scoreboard. Darn it.
It's not a bad bit.
The half-street homer-hitting homies. Yes. I love alliteration.
Half-street homies would have worked just fine, but I like
the half-street homer.
I know. I get it.
The offense is in fuego.
I get it. Okay. I get it.
Shout out to the Nats, man. Shout out to Spencer Nussbaum as well. Full transparency, he told us he had to bounce at a certain time, and we called him a little bit late because I suck, and he was like, dude, no problem, man, anytime. So he enjoyed our conversation. So shout out to him. We will hear from him coming up soon. We're also going to hear from Victor Wembanyama soon, hopefully in a positive way. We didn't hear from him after game number 5 when he decided to dip out on the media. Did not like that, and I said the next time, you know, I took the airwaves. I'd lay into him. It's just hard for me to do. I get why he dipped out. Here's my thing with Wemby. If you're not familiar, if he is able to stay healthy, I think he's going to be the greatest player this game has ever seen. I think his impact on both ends of the floor is unprecedented. It's like Kevin Durant and Hakeem Olajuwon on stilts. Meshing talents is the best way that I can put it. Like, this dude, and he's 22 years of age. Like, that's the one thing. Anytime I'm critical of him, I got to remember the brother's 22. Like last game, I wanted to be critical because there's a clear formula that has worked for San Antonio in this series, and it's him being uber aggressive offensively. That's when they win. You did not see that in game number 5 where he had just, what, like 7 shot attempts in the first half. You are Victor Wembanyama, damn it. You're supposed to be shooting 20-plus shots, 25 shots a night, especially on a night when De'Aaron Fox and Kelton Johnson and Devin Vassell didn't shoot the ball worth a darn. They needed Giannis, and he was not there. He came in tonight, and this is where I wish. I'm going to tweet the video out and shamelessly plug my social media because what else would I do? It is at NELL_BTP. I'm going to tweet it out. Dude, this Victor Wembanyama and what his ass is wearing in the building tonight. Look, y'all done messed up now. He came in, the best way that I can describe his fit, he looks like a dude that literally visited the Shaolin monks before entering the building tonight in San Antonio for game number 6. You called it a Komodo, Max? Is that what you referred to it as?
It's kind of, it looks like a Komodo, but it's not. It looks like half between a Komodo and an extra long nightgown, which is weird to say.
He's got a
because everything's
on.
Extra long he's on Victor Wembanyama.
He's wearing a muumuu. He's wearing a muumuu in the building. No, he, the old, the kids like to say, and I look at the youngest in charge referring to younger people as kids. The kids like to say, It's giving. I just left the Monks, and I'm about to go drop 40 on that ass.
I just dribbled the basketball up the mountain that Ramona Shelburne told you guys about.
Yeah, for 4 hours at a time, so my arms broke off. I mean, he's just absolutely, he's cut from a different cloth, and he's 22, and all of it's great. The reason that I think he's going to be one of the all-time greats is that mentality. What I've had an issue with, or what I had an issue with in Game 5, I have praised him routinely for the mentality. I don't think that mentality was there in Game 5 because of his lack of aggression and then him being a little crybaby and not talking to the media post-game. He was upset. Victor was upset. You were angry at your big man, wasn't he? He's 22, so we can make baby noises at him. He's a kid. But that kid has responded every chance that he's had. Every time he's been met with adversity throughout the course of this postseason, he has responded. I expect him to respond again tonight. You go to the opening round series against Portland, gets a concussion, and then it kind of speaks to the narrative of, oh, he's not going to be able to stay healthy, not going to be able to stay healthy. 27-17 the very next game. Elbows Naz Reid in the neck, only gets to play 12 minutes in the Western Conference semis. Very next game, gives you a 35-piece. Earlier in this series, game two or game three, when OKC came back and punched him in the mouth, Victor Wembanyama came out and gave you 40. You know what I'm saying? So, every chance he's had, he's responded in a really impressive manner to adversity. I expect him to respond tonight. I'm debating, right? Well, we got our pals at the old FanDuel Sportsbook. I'm thinking about dropping a little $5, 75-cent parlay on a Wembley, is what I call it. When I just bet on all Wemby props, I call it a Wembley. 40-plus points, 12-plus rebounds, 3-plus blocks. I'm going to run the numbers on that in a commercial break, and I'll tell you if you should throw some shekels on it. But Wemby and the Spurs locking horns with SGA and the Thunder coming up at 8:30. Super excited. We will keep you up to speed with that as we roll throughout the evening here tonight on 106.7 The Fan, man. Youngest in charge, back in the saddle, excited to be here. I was out at Commander's OTAs yesterday, the first open OTA session to the media. I'll give you my thoughts on that coming up top of the 8 o'clock hour. When we come back, though, there is a problem that I have noticed since I have switched my geographic location that's plaguing the DMV, and that is next. This is like a reunion of all sorts tonight. Max, I'm actually so excited that you're here, and I was saying that.
Oh, yeah. When Kevin was going to Europe and I knew I needed more hours, so I was doing I told Drab, I was like, hey, put me wherever you need me. And I saw I was going to be on overtime, and I saw the host was blank. I was like, I really hope it's Toby or Linnell.
For sure. We here doing it, man. I just thought about the time you helped me move.
Oh, man, what a day that was. Good God.
What a day. Lifting couches. You would have thought, man, you could hire us. Give us a truck.
Yeah, two guys in a truck. We would have had it.
Shoot. Literally, man. And we had some good old Kennys. I've had to lay off the Kennys because it's caused me to balloon and turn into an obese man. But I'm working on going in the opposite direction. I say that to say I may or may not have Chinese carryout tonight because I'm seeing you and I'm just...
I mean, you're just in the mood for it.
It just puts me in the mood.
Yeah, I'm going to have to figure out what I'm doing after the show, what I'm getting for food.
It's always a good thought. The game starting at 8:30 is interesting. By the way, the game is Spurs and Thunder. The game! Spurs and Thunder game 6. From San Antonio. San Antonio, if they lose, go home. And OKC will punch their ticket to the finals. One of, like, the most cool niche sports is on right now. The college baseball playoffs.
Nope.
College tournament. Well, is that not it?
Not what's on front of you.
That's not it?
That's softball.
You're right, it is softball. That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Doesn't the college playoffs start this weekend, I'm pretty sure? Okay. Mm-hmm. So is this just the women's version of it?
Yeah, so I think the women's are in their regional version right now, or are they in super regionals?
At Oklahoma City. Okay, my cousin from Oklahoma just came and visited me.
Yeah, so they're, it's there are a couple interesting storylines we've been covering over on XM, but I'm not locked in on college softball, but I do know that it's either Nebraska, UCLA, Oklahoma.
Usual suspects.
Yeah, it's the usual suspects kind of going through this one, but UCLA's offense has been unreal this entire season, but Nebraska's pitching staff has been great. Bama's pitching staff has also been great.
A low-scoring game.
Yeah.
2-1, top third, so.
Yeah, we got a good set of Diamond Sports coming up in the world of college sports.
This is a part of a doubleheader. So if the game, that's right, ESPN had the Eastern Conference Finals. NBC has
NBC.
The West. Okay, so I was about to say, this is part one of a doubleheader. There's Arkansas-Nebraska after, and I'm like, well, if that's playing at 9:30, well, where are they putting Wemby at? They're putting Wemby on NBC, champ. Just it'll be
national.
It'll be A-O-K. Him and money-making Mike Tirico, man, who's been awesome throughout this playoffs. As usual, you know who hasn't been awesome? You all. You all suck. Especially you all that live in Southern Maryland and drive and abuse the horn the way that you do. I don't know what's happened, but like it's a really sad thing. There was
Listen, you want to talk Maryland drivers, brother. We can talk Maryland drivers.
We can do it. We can do it, Max. So I'm going to start with something pretty somber first. There was a story, I don't know if you saw this, where like someone, I think it was like Upper Marlboro, Suitland area, followed somebody to the Amazon job and shot him and killed him after blowing the horn at him in a road rage.
That's insane.
After getting the horn blown at them. So, like, I'm being facetious and funny when talking about you all as bad drivers, but, like, I'm more so trying to get to the bottom of horn culture in the DMV. 1-800-636-1067. Horn culture in the DMV. Why do you all – do you get frustrated or feel disrespected when someone blows their horn at you?
Slightly, but, like, when – I've clearly, like, when I know what reason it's for, I get it. It's how we are communicating with the cars around us.
Now, you brought up something, and I want your calls on this, seriously, at 1-800-636-1067. If you're in the DMV, what is your thoughts on the current horn culture in the DMV? Do you get angry and upset when someone blows the horn? Are you a habitual horn blower? I got a rental car last summer from a certain dealership that I won't name because... Yeah. They gave me a rental car with no damn horn.
Huh. Is that legal?
No. I'm up to my neck with those people. They gave me a rental car with no horn. And I got my car broken into on the lot. And they did not reimburse me for anything. I still have glass underneath my seat. It was the worst. They had me in a rental car for like 4 or 5 months. But I want to take calls on horn culture here in the DMV. Because I have had a couple of incidents with the horn within the last month or so, and I don't really drive that much and that often because I get to work from home most of the time. But, like, people, when you blow the horn at them, like, people get so offended and feel so disrespected, and I'm wondering why that is. So if you're somebody out there who's a little sensitive about the horn being blown at you, or if you're somebody that likes to use the horn, are you using it to disrespect someone, or are you doing what Max said and using it as a means of communication? Because that's what it's for. That's what it's for.
It's the only times I've ever used the horn or had the horn used on me is sitting at a, sitting at a light.
That sounded crazy.
And like I'm looking at my phone, like sitting at the light.
Yeah.
And then I don't notice it changes. I hear a horn honk behind me. I'm like, all right, you know what? Yeah, my bad. I shouldn't have been paying attention. Hit the gas, go. Or, you know, you're making a lane change. You look over. You don't see anybody, and then you move over again, and you're like, oh, someone's right there. That's when you hear the horn, and that's when you get back into your lane and keep on driving. Those are the only real times I think it's acceptable to use the horn.
Okay, so that's where we may differ. There are some situations where that horn needs to get spanked, is the best way that I could put it. We have, and this is me maybe needing to be, you know, minding my own damn business and not trying to be the neighborhood watch. I have this turn that I make to go into my apartment complex, and I have to wait on people to the opposite direction of traffic first, and people will be flying down this road.
Yeah.
And I blew my horn at this one dude because I'm like, dog, slow the hell down. Why are you driving? We're in a neighborhood. You're doing like 70 in a 25. And we have children in the neighborhood. Slow your ass down.
You upstanding citizen.
That's why I honked my horn. I'm going to tell you what happened. He stopped his car. I honked my horn. He stopped his car.
Screeching halt.
Screeching halt. He's in an all-black Nissan Altima with super tinted out windows that Charles County should have pulled him over for.
Your life was at risk.
My life, little did I know, my life was at risk here. So he winds the window down and was like, "What's up?" And I'm like, "Dog, I'm just trying to tell you to slow down, bro. You're driving so fast. Like, I beat my horn for you to slow." And mind you, I said this verbatim. I'm trying to really tell him, like, why I honked at you.
Yeah, I'm trying to be real.
I'm trying to get your attention. And he said, "You want me to step out the car?" I said, "No, I don't want you to step out of the car. I want you not to drive at rates of speed that put me and my community in danger. That's it. That's all I asked for, Max."
I think that's a fair ask.
And see, that's the problem. See, I come off as a little soft-spoken. It's probably hard to believe for some folks to listen regularly. I come off as soft-spoken. When I get out that car and it's all 6'2", 200, damn near 300 pounds of me, you probably would have changed your act. I didn't get out of the car, though, because I'm a mature adult. I de-escalated the situation by just
proud of you
going and driving away, because it's like, I don't want to get killed because I chose to use my horn, a safety feature that everyone puts on the car except for one dealership when giving out a rental.
Fair gripe.
We had a couple callers on the line. I hope you all just got out of your car. Is that what this was? You were there. You wanted to talk about honk culture, and then maybe you got honked at. I'll throw out the number once more. 1-800-636-1067. DMV horn culture. Are you a habitual horn blower? Are you someone that hangs on the horn, as I like to call it, and goes instead of a burp?
It depends. There's always, I'll always give them like a quick little beep. Mm-mm. And then if I don't, yeah, a quick 1-2.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't move,
yeah,
I'm laying it on.
Mm.
Like I will do the entire time until you move.
Are you? And
we can and have gotten into waiting contests before.
That's just I get it. It's part of the problem. It's part of the culture, though. I think it's a DMV thing, if I'm being honest. I feel like some people are immature.
I think it's everywhere.
Think it's everywhere?
I think it's every big city. But if you, like, if you're honking the horn at somebody in Iowa City, I think that's just, you've committed a mortal sin.
You know?
And everybody thinks lesser of you.
Because they're really trying. So, I think the horn, to be honest, it's supposed to be used as a means of communication. Most times, the problem is it's used out of frustration. It's not supposed to be a tool for frustrated people. It's supposed to be a means of communicating for safety reasons.
Fair.
It's like the middle finger of the car.
There have been times, I will admit, and this is very fat of me, but I've been sitting at that drive-thru. I've been sitting at that drive-thru for
too damn long.
It feels like 20 minutes. And I haven't done it yet, but it happened to me the other day, and I was really thinking about it. And it's funny that we're having this conversation right now, because, man.
Were you getting impatient?
No, I wasn't getting impatient. I don't get impatient or rude or anything like that with anybody. It's just the car in front of me had been sitting there for a while, and I noticed there wasn't a lot of movement happening back there, but I wasn't seeing anybody. Mm-hmm. So I knew they were clearly working on something.
Right.
So I was like, all right, I'm just going to wait it out. Eventually we got there, but it just took way longer than I felt like it needed to. Because it was, what are you getting at Burger King that's going to take 25 minutes?
Oh, you were at the Kang's house.
Yeah. Okay.
So I expect when you're at the Kang's house and you're having it your way, I expect for the service to be top tier. I don't expect my pleasures or, you know, overpriced snacks like you get from Chick-fil-A. But I do expect the service to be top tier. I do. I wanted to tell you something about Mitchell Robinson. I'm going to do that, and I'm also going to talk about the Washington Commanders. I want your calls, though, if we got any. I feel a little thirsty doing that, but I'll ask again. 1-800-636-1067. Horn culture in the DMV. Why do people get angry when they get the horn honked at them? Are you someone that takes it offensively, or do you understand that you probably just screwed up? Your calls on horn culture in the DMV and an update on the Eastern Conference champions next.